Hello and welcome everybody to this week's College Investor Live. I am excited to have Tyler Gardner, social cap on TikTok and on social media. And we are going to be talking about wealth building myths, things you see online. Hopefully we're going to steer you in the right direction. And if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, please drop them in the comments on whatever platform you're seeing this on. We'd love to chat about it. Tyler, you want to introduce yourself really quick here while I do some housekeeping for everybody?
Sure. Yeah. So I had the good fortune of connecting with Robert a couple weeks back, and I've just been breaking into the TikTok space. And for about 15 years, I was an educator teaching economics and English courses in New England. And after a while, decided that financial literacy was kind of, I don't want to say the cliche of my calling as much as just I loved speaking about finance, but I also loved speaking about it in a way that was truly accessible and, as kind of democratized as possible and digestible. I mean, so going on to different social media platforms has been outstanding to just kind of find what voice is already out there, what information is out there. And of course, in light of our conversation today, what misinformation is out there. So I've been in the finance world for about 3 years now, and I'm looking forward to creating more and more content.
And I love that. And we were talking right before the call of just the lack of personal finance education that we're seeing in the United States. And I always think right now we're recording this, it's tax season, right? And there's always that meme that goes around the web that says like, I'm so glad that I learned the Pythagorean theorem instead of learning how to do my taxes, right? And I think that's just a common thing that we see. But I think it plays both edges, right? I think we're doing a disservice to so many people. But on the flip side, we're also opening them up to, prey. Like, because they don't know, they're more subject to, those fancy salespeople, fast talkers, the bait and switch kind of stuff. I mean, like, what are your thoughts on just kind of personal financial literacy, I guess, before we dive into anything else?
Sure. I think that's the number one reason I came to TikTok. And I'll start by saying I will never pretend that anything I'm saying or anything I'm doing is necessarily right or above all else applicable to everybody. But I came on there because I had seen this influx and this inundation of misinformation when it came to things that everybody is concerned about, right? And the two universals that I always discuss with people are health and wealth. Regardless of where you live, where you're from, health and wealth are two things that impact every one of us. And the problem is when you have things that impact us so seriously and directly, you're susceptible to anybody selling you the dream and the vision of what will alleviate that pain point. And so when I was looking at TikTok specifically to start, the amount of air quote financial gurus that were selling types of products or types of courses or types of ideas that it was clear within about 5 seconds they had never employed themselves, never were going to employ themselves, and quite frankly, could just be wrong. It just was an opportunity to say, look, as a burgeoning platform that is absolutely one of the most dominant platforms for under 40 demographics right now, who is highly susceptible to learning some of these things for the first time, there need to be more voices that are willing to say, this is right and this is wrong. So I'm hoping that we can move towards the Wikipedia model where with enough voices on these platforms, eventually it kind of weeds out what is okay and what is not okay.
And I love that. And I think you also touched on, where this comes from is that, there's not one size fits all. I always like to say personal finance is personal. And there might be a different tool or strategy that works on your season of life. And I know a lot of financial gurus are saying, well, this is what, people with $10 million or billionaires do. And it's like, hey, when you're 22 and you're trying to pay off your student loans and budget for the first time, your actual needs and tools and services are probably going to be very different than someone that has $1 billion and a family office and a team of people that are helping them,
Well, I do. Well, and that's also, it's highly problematic. And I wish if there was a message just to kind of send to as much of a, and I'll just kind of make this a little ageist to a younger community who's looking at this for the first time, it's that if you're buying into an argument that because somebody with $10 million or a millionaire, a billionaire, or the ultra wealthy or the super rich do this, that you should, the first thing about investing in finance that anybody has to kind of think through here is that the reason that someone with $10 million can and potentially should employ a certain strategy is that they are willing and able to take on more risk than someone who is 22 saving for a down payment on a home, who is looking to go to college or send their child to college. It's called the sophisticated investor, right? And the idea is, if you know about how these products work and you know about how the strategies work, that's great. But the fact that because the ultra wealthy are using this strategy is being used as a sales pitch for people that don't have that money to use that same strategy is highly problematic and dangerous. Yeah, at this point.
Right. And that's it. And I think not just the risk, but I think it's also the cost, right? When you have 10 million, 500 million, whatever it is, you might be willing to pay a lot of money to not lose. And I think that's what I think a lot of people don't realize when it comes to some of these strategies. And one of the more popular ones that we have been seeing a lot about lately is indexed universal life insurance, or IULs, and different things. And these are insurance contracts that, you know, potentially have some type of return, but the sales pitch is you can never lose. And, you know, it's not quite true that you can never, right? It's not quite true you can never lose, but the premise is that you minimize your downside risk. And you're doing it by paying an insurance premium, right? And so like you are literally insuring to not lose money, but they're just completely missold in a lot of ways. Like, aren't you seeing that all over as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and as we were discussing right before kind of coming live, it's a fight that I believe it's worth picking with anybody who's packaging and selling these products this way. But it develops such a visceral reaction by anybody selling the product that I or we are calling these people bad people. I'd like to believe that everyone, hopefully, I'd really like to believe that everybody's on here to try to educate. But when it comes to an indexed universal life policy, one of the biggest problems we have with this is that it's being packaged and sold right now as a wealth building tool. But by definition, it is an insurance contract, okay? And the problem with it being sold this way is that in order for it to work the way in which many of these agents are saying it should work, you have to put in such large quantities of initial funding to fund the cash value to make it grow at a rate that would ultimately give you the return that they're saying it would give you, that I promise the majority of the people who are being sold by this cannot fund the cash value in that way. So if they can't take advantage of that, all they're doing in the early stages is paying premiums on an insurance contract, on a not term, but on a potentially a whole life insurance contract that's going to cost more money. The premiums will increase. And the packaging and the sales of it right now is very problematic.
And you're right. And I think that's the other thing that people don't realize is that when you're a younger person, you typically have you have a competition for dollars, right? Like we don't have infinite money and you have a paycheck and you are competing on how you're going to allocate your savings/investing chunk. You know, if you could do both, okay, maybe you could, but like, you know, if you're trying to save for retirement, if you're trying to save for a down payment on a house, if you're trying to, you know, have an emergency fund and you're having this competition for dollars, it really is hard to sell that. And like you said, people just can't, you know, most people that are being sold these policies can't do both, right?
Right. Well, you can't do both, but I think that I guess my other biggest problem here or just challenge to people selling this is I really wish there was just a more open discussion about what these products were, what they cost, and the upsides and the downsides, right? When we talk to clients early on, if somebody wants to know, am I going to be able to retire in 20 years with enough money to spend out $60,000 annually for 20 years of long-term care, et cetera? We go through what's called a Monte Carlo scenario. And the Monte Carlo scenario will develop all different types of paths that could, you know, that could happen with somebody's wealth, based on different potential for risk. You know, so we say, look, best case scenario, you'll have $120,000 a year. Worst case scenario, if you keep spending and living this way, you might only have $30,000. So there actually is a path where you might have very little based on your current habits, right? So what do we do with that? I have not seen any Monte Carlo scenarios offered by agents selling IULs right now. It's just here's the best possible path and the highest possible numbers that you could have if everything were to go well for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to bring this up really quick. So some independent financial planners have done a bunch of Monte Carlo scenarios. So you can find this link. This is from honestmath.com. I really like what this team's been doing. I'm going to drop it in the comments if people want to click.
This is great.
There.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen this. Have you seen this?
I have not seen this.
Oh, okay. So this is a giant model, and it's, let's see, how many pages long? 84 pages long of Monte Carlo simulations on Indexed Universal Life Insurance based on the MPI plan. And this is, it breaks it all down. And if you really want to dive into the wonkiness, it really shows how it fails in, you know, 99.9% of all circumstances. You know, there are some successful circumstances. It's not, but it is 1%. It's not like, you know, for that, because it requires a lot of funding. It requires that you, the market works in your favor, right? So, you know, if you back test these scenarios too, you have to realize that we've been on a 14-year bull market at this point in time.
Yep.
Like, we are on an unprecedented run of stock market performance. And at some point in time, there will be a reversion to the mean. And that mean could also change. You know, there's some forecasts that say, like, even the last 30-year mean might be above the long-term mean of, like, you go out to 100 years or something like that. And so, like, the performance matters, because you have to realize these insurance contracts have a, you know, a cap, right? So they'll only give you so much of a return. And I think they're at like 10, 12%. But one thing they don't tell you is that the insurance companies are in business to make money, and they will lower the cap. And so the only trend that ever happens with indexed universal life insurance policies is that the cap goes down over time.
Yep, insurance companies. I guess what's going up over time is your premium. Stock,
your premium goes up over time because you are getting older and or more likely to die. Yeah. So the insurance company will charge you more. Your cap is going to go down because the insurance company wants to make more money. And you know, your interest rates. So like, one of the big strategies of these plans is that you borrow against your policy, right? You bank on yourself. And I'm putting that in air quotes because, yep, you know, you're not really banking on yourself, but you're taking a loan against your policy. Well, what's happening to loan rates these days?
Thank you.
Loan rates are rising. So, you know, it's amazing when you borrow at 3%, like everyone loved the last 2 years when that happens, but now, you know, you're borrowing at 6-7%.
Yeah.
And that significantly changes the math of any kind of loan, especially a loan against yourself. So
not only the math, but just like, this is where I get back to the human level of just integrity and finance. If I'm going to sell you this IUL and I'm going to sell it as tax-free income, knowing full well that it is a loan, okay, and all loans are tax-free. Let's start with this, okay? You don't pay taxes on this. It's not some grand marketing strategy. When you take a loan, you're paying interest. That is the tax. And in a rising rate environment, you're paying right now a lot of interest on these various plans. And I have not heard one person packaging and selling IULs who is willing to just come out and say, look, before anything else, let me just say, first and foremost, these are expensive right now. These are expensive. If you have the money to fund the cash value to get to a point where you want to see the returns that you want to see, if you can pay the initial premiums, if you make it through the first decade without needing the money and having to pay liquidity surrender charges, right? Or as the MPIs call it, quitter's fees, which in and of itself is so problematic that they're reshifting and calling you a quitter for needing your money back. But if you're able to do all that, here's the interest that it's going to cost you. And I would love it if just someone said, look, like at the end of the day, you're going to be paying 7% on a loan against your own money. You know, right. And so even though let's even say in a good year where the market returns 20%, but you've got a cap of 10%. Now we're not talking 10%. We're talking a net, right? Net. And so anybody having to do with the IUL thinking about getting these contracts needs to teach themselves today gross performance versus net performance. And everything that an IUL salesperson right now is pitching is the gross performance. And they say, okay, the market could give you the 10% with this cap. But if you minus out the interest you're paying, then you minus out the premium, then you minus out the commissions and administrative costs, you might net zero in a year where the market gave you the 10% that they were selling. So I'm struggling with that.
And that's the other thing too, is, you know, it's sold as you can't lose money, but what they're actually selling is that you might only get a 0% return. So let's just say the market drops, you know, 20%. We have a recession, a crash. Well, you're going to get a 0% return on the contract, but you're still going to owe any loan fees. You're still going to have to pay your insurance premiums and all this. So you literally can actually pay more. Your return will be zero. Okay. So, you know, I think that's the problem. But they also compare it to, and this is a good segue into, you know, some funner conversations, I guess, is they compare it to, you know, I always see they throw out terrible numbers, but your expense ratio and your fees on your 401k and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Because we have to be fair that pretty much every investment product in the world today does have fees and costs. Like, it's not a zero-sum game. Look at Wall Street. It's a very beautiful high-rise, lots of money, you know, supercomputers and all kinds of stuff. And that money comes from somewhere. It usually comes from fees. So, you know, if you're trying to compare the two, what do you see is like a good, what's good fees? Like, what should people look for in other investment options versus this, right?
Yeah. Well, to say that there's a such thing as a good fee or a bad fee is problematic, because what I'd like to have everybody think through is, first of all, every one of us in the finance industry should just be saying, here are the fees. Here's every fee that you're going to face when you interact with me, whether it's for the service or for a good that I'm selling. Once you've seen those fees, if you believe that the service or the good is worth it, fantastic. You know, but as far as what is a good fee, where people want to be looking is at expense ratios. Expense ratios are basically the administrative and operating costs behind any funds in which you're going to invest. Right now, you can invest in different types of ETFs and index funds that have expense ratios of 0.02%. Not only that, you actually now can even invest in index funds that have 0% expense ratios. 0%. So it's not as if there aren't ways in which some of the finance companies are making some money off of this, but the difference between paying a premium versus paying some of these expense ratios, if you are informed enough to know what to look for, is drastic over time, right? Absolutely drastic. So as far as what's a good fee, I think it just depends what you're looking for. If you're just looking to track an index like the S&P or the Dow, very low fees available, very low fees.
Right. And I think that's what I think, you know, when I see these salespeople out there, they're like, you might be paying 2 or 3% management fees and all these other fees. And it's, you know, I would say that's high. And, you know, you can actually get very low fees, even for managed portfolios and stuff, and a robo advisor or other things. So when you're comparing it, like you said, you have the gross, then you have the net. And I think you need to be looking at the net of all of your products.
Absolutely.
Yep. Whether it's life insurance or index investing or whatever, alternative investing, which, you know, has become very popular. If you're watching this on YouTube right now, which I know some people are, you know, I see a lot of ads for alternative investments showing up on YouTube, and those have fees as well. And you have to look, what are the management fees? What are the expense ratios? What is my actual gross going to be of these returns? And I think a lot of people end up kind of shocked once they realize it, because, you know, it's very hard to outperform the aggregate index of the world over time. You know, not to say, and I always like to say this analogy too, is that, you know, there's, I did the math, there's over 2,000 people that win over $1 million in the lottery every year in the United States. So 2,000 people, they nailed it, right? They paid their dollar. And they had that outsized return, right? Yeah. But then did you ever see that Mr. Beast video where he bought $100,000 in scratchers?
Yeah.
And they all scratched him off. And when you aggregated out over that much, he only made $78,000, I think. And so, like, as you aggregate out performance, like, you can actually see that you get closer to the mean, which I think is an amazing math model for students and stuff. So, like, one lottery ticket, yeah, you could have a loss, you could win a free ticket, you could win $1 million. But like when you actually do it times, you know, whatever it was, 100,000 tickets, you actually get really, really close to what the actual average, you know, little stack on the back is. And that's the same thing with investing, right? You know, and so you talk a lot about this. I was just, you know, we were on your YouTube channel or your TikTok channel, and you have a ton of, here, I'm going to put it up so people can check it out here. We will throw that there. Oh, there we go. Oh, where are we at? We will find it. There we go. Oh, that's Curtis Ray still. That's not you. We'll go back.
Oh, that's Curtis. Oh, no.
There you go.
Different account altogether.
So one of your last videos that just stuck out to me is, you know, the step-by-step plan to become a millionaire, why you're not a millionaire. And I think that's also one of the sales that millionaires do this, millionaires do that. So like, you've talked to a lot of millionaires. I have too. Like, what do you see like millionaires doing these days, and how are they making it? Like, how do they get there? Yeah. How do most people get there? Right.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'll just give a complete transparency footnote too, is that, you know, everybody always and forever needs to take with a grain of salt anything somebody says on TikTok as a hook. Right. So the basic formula of the TikTok hook is that that first line has to get your attention. And it actually is like the bane of my existence as a creator on TikTok, is that I have to say something that I don't really want to say. I don't really love saying, you know, do you want to be a millionaire before your friends, or do you want to be the first millionaire in your family? But if you notice, like, you will get a much wider reach if you use a line like that. But as far as what they're doing, the truth behind that video, I mean, that's, I'm so glad that that video did well, because it's one of the more authentic videos I've posted. Like, I'm kind of getting tired of the viral back and forth, you know, I'm talking to myself gimmicky versus this, where it's like, look, it's not rocket science. It's a very easy process, but it's a long process. Just like you said, right? I could today go to Las Vegas and put $50,000 on 13 on the roulette table. And if I strike, I did very well. Now, I'd be wrong to come back and say that that was a good wealth building strategy, because I happened to win in that case. A good wealth building strategy is consistency over time. That's it. That is it. Short practices and being consistent with it. You know, so, and it's the analogy I like to give, going back to the health and wealth, is that every single person I talk to who is doing really well financially right now has a core, right? Has a core investment strategy. And that core is so boring. There's nothing about it that is sexy. There's nothing about it where you'd say, wow, like, this person really knows so much about what types, you know, these incredible alternative strategies to invest. They just know to put it into a basic low-cost market strategy, and then to not look at it, to not touch it, through good times, through bad times, just to keep dollar cost averaging into it. So, you know, if that video is kind of indicative of anything that I noticed with trends of ultra high net worth and high net worth clients, it's that they're just consistent over time with good strategies. And when they are in or experiencing some type of emotional response to the markets, they go for a walk or they call somebody, right? And they talk through this. Is there any reason for me to act in any irrational way right now, at the risk of a 20-year plan that will ultimately lead to very good things if I just leave it alone?
And I think you nailed it. I think that's the hard part, is that it's not sexy. And some of these other things-
It's very boring.
It is, but I think we live in this day and age of instant gratification, social media.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
so
yeah.
I see this a lot with young adults, is, you know, we got them to open the Robinhood account because they like their app. You know, they put in, you know, let's just say, you know, $100, right? And they just put it in the S&P 500, and that went up 10% last year, which is a great return. But your $100 is now only $110.
I know.
And you're just like, what? Like, what? Yeah. What's the point of all that, right? And it kind of like bums them out that, like, that's it. And it's like, you know, but what the trick is, you know, you got to do this every month, and then you get the $10 every month. But then that $10 also is now earning you an extra dollar the next year. And then it's just going to keep doing that. And, you know, you look at all the compound interest charts and they're so flat for like 15 years. And then it's just like, it just does this, because that's when all that growth really just starts kicking in. But it takes time, consistency, like you said, but it's hard to stay motivated, right?
Of course it is.
Like, how do you get people to save every month? Right? Like, it's hard.
Well, you do it by automating it. I mean, so you want to remove, as far as positive strategies, you want to remove as many emotional components to investing as possible. Because I the amount of people to whom I speak on a monthly basis where they either say, I'm not going into the market right now because it's overpriced, or I'm not going into the market right now because it's a down market, the bottom line is they're being left out of the market. And if you're being left out of the market over time, you're going to lose the game, right? But it's just this idea of getting in, automating it so that you have no emotional response to anything you're doing. I've automated investing for the last 15 years, and it is without a doubt the greatest, wealthiest habit that I could ever have. And because of that, I've built something that I can say, okay, that's nice going forward.
And that's, I love it. I just wanted to pull this up so people could see. This is the chart of a penny doubling each day. It's one of my favorite examples. But you start on day one and you are literally at 1 cent, right? You don't even get to $1,000 until day 18, right? It takes that long. But then from like day 18 to day 25, you go from $1,000 to $100,000+. Like it really just starts magnifying itself. And then you can see you get up to like $5 million. So, you know, as you are thinking about it, it takes so long to get going, but you just nailed it, automating. So what are some easy ways that people starting out can automate this in their just day-to-day life? Because, you know, people don't want it to be hard either, right? Like how do you automate your investing?
Well, I know that some of the apps, and I don't use these too much at this point just because I have my own strategies for the automating, but I know that a lot of the apps are trying to become more and more user-friendly to, let's just say, rounding up. Rounding up is a good example of what I think is a pretty productive strategy of, you know, each day, if you were to just take the 13 cents left over from buying eggs down at the store, even though we have no money left over from buying eggs right now, but you know, the change that you have from time, and you just kind of don't see it, but it's always consistently going to this place. What I would do right now, if I were, I mean, what I am doing and what I would encourage every single person to do, go to your HR office, if you have one, and just ask them, you know, what are my retirement account options? What's available to me at this company? What's available to me in this business? And can I afford, that's your next step, is then what can I afford to kind of put from my paycheck towards this program, right? So with small businesses, you might have access to a simple IRA or a SEP IRA. With bigger corporations or companies, you might have access to a 401k or a 403b. Right? If you're just on your own, you definitely, every one of us has access to a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA. And so with so many options out there to have the tax advantages, you can go on these apps or just call them. I promise you this too, any financial institution wants your money and they'll be willing to work with you to get your money. So there are customer service teams devoted to answering all of these questions. Whenever people ask me about resources, I say, trust me, just call them. They'll pick up your call, you know, because they want to get you as a client. And so if you call and say, look, I'm 22, I want to invest $100 a month, they'll walk you through step by step how to do that so that your paycheck, and this is the ultimate punchline here, so that the paycheck that you bring home isn't, let's just say, $1,000, but it's $900 and you didn't even know that it was $1,000. So you've got this kind of side hustle, if you will, that is absolutely accumulating over time, and you're learning to live on $900 every pay period. And that in and of itself is one of the habits of the wealthy, that if you can't master that, you're never going to be wealthy. You need to live on less than you make, period. Yeah. And so by automating something, you're required to do, you have no choice. You have to, you know, whereas if that $100 is coming to me every month, I'm like, nah, I do kind of want to go out to a nice dinner tonight. And you'll make choices that don't necessarily benefit the long-term growth if it's not automated monthly.
And I love that because I think those tools make it so easy. And I know when I had my first job, I had a 5% 401k match too.
Yeah.
So like, not only if I put in 5%, my company would also throw in 5%. So it was like a bonus, right? Like by actually not doing it, I was getting less pay because I was leaving that money on the table to do it. And my actual biggest regret now today in my 30s is that I didn't put more into my 401k when I was younger, because guess what happened with that extra money from my paycheck every month? I spent it on stupid stuff, right? Like, you know, and like, if I raised my match to say 5% to 6%, it might've taken $28 out of my paycheck or something so inconsequential. But guess what? Me having that $28 meant that I went for another round of drinks, or we did something dumb. And it's just, that money is just gone, right? It's like literally like taking a match to it and burning it. And, you know, maybe there was a little value in it at that time, had some good times. But on the same time, by automating it and making it come out so seamlessly, like, again, I'm living on my net. I love that example that you gave versus the gross, right? Everything's going to its places, I'm saving, and then you're living on the net and trying to make everything work from that. And that's a great strategy to do it.
Well, that's it. And you hear people, I mean, the phrase that everyone says kind of in the personal finance world and literature world is pay yourself first. And that's all it means, right? Is that before you take the money out to pay the government for taxes and you take it out to pay for utilities, that the first chunk out of your paycheck every single pay period should be directly to a tax advantaged account for you. period. I don't care which one it is. I don't care how much you're putting it in. People rely, the biggest feedback I get on the TikTok videos is always, you know, people saying that they can't put in as much as I'm telling them to put in. And that's irrelevant. I put up numbers just to show limits on different account types. Put in one penny a day. Because it's the habit. It's the habit of mind of just saying it's something I care about and it's something that I'd like to build towards, right? And you'll feel confident about it. I mean, that's the thing. This will really impact your day of life. You're all of a sudden an investor. You are classified now as an investor. If you have a 401k or 403b, you might not know it, but you are an investor. And so you can start taking part in conversations that otherwise you might say, I never really felt empowered to talk about this, but I am impacted by the global economy and markets on a daily basis because I'm invested in these markets.
I love it. And that's it too. I think as Americans, we have literally like one thing in common for all of us is that we all have a desire to pay less in taxes. like we literally, I don't think there's a single American at any age bracket, any tax bracket that wants to pay more in taxes. Our goal is to pay less in taxes. So one of the best ways to do it, like you just said, is using a tax advantage retirement account, a 401k, a traditional IRA. You're paying yourself, and by doing so, you lower your tax ability, your taxable income, and so you pay less in taxes. It's like, it's a win-win. I also think of Jason Vitug was here a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about money habits. And one thing that he said that he met with somebody that to build the habit of savings, they physically went into their online bank account and transferred $1 a day from their checking account to their savings account for 30 days, just to feel the empowerment every single day of building that habit to save for themselves. And I think it's just a very powerful thing to have savings, to have those investments. And the more you automate it, the better, right?
Well, and so here's the way that I think you go right in line with that idea. The way that I think anybody can instantaneously see the power of this is ask yourself why businesses who rely on revenue through streaming services that are subscription-based, why they work so hard to have you automate that subscription payment. And they do it because you set it and you forget it. And so it's nice. And the genius behind this strategy is that we think it's so convenient and amazing that we buy into and say, I don't ever want to think about my cash outflow and all of these streaming services. Whereas that's the exact logic that you should not be applying to your cash outflow, but your cash inflow to yourself. Is that if we could convince ourselves to do what we do for a Netflix or a Hulu or a Disney Plus or any of these subscription packages, if we could do that to our own subscription package, our long-term wealth-building subscription package, we would be in such good shape. And if we de-automated some of the outflows and actually every month had to stare at the amount of little subscriptions that's going out the window, I think it would be a pretty big eye opener, you know, just in that exact way of just what it would look like.
Absolutely. You reminded me of this amazing story where this was last year, but 1.5 million people still pay for the AOL dial-up CDs because it's just automated. Right?
Oh man, you just hit me right in the generational feeling. I grew up with AOL.
Right.
Hopefully I'm not one of those. I might be one of those 1.5 million people. I've got to check now if I'm one of the people still paying for this.
Isn't that crazy to think about, though, that people are still automating this AOL dial-up stuff? And it's also, I also think, you know, beyond the subscription ecosystem, there's also this second ecosystem of apps that help you cancel subscriptions.
Yeah.
Because it's so hard. Let me analyze your bank statements. Let me try to figure out what you're spending. And so we can cancel those subscriptions for you. That because it's so hard to get out of them, right? And it's the same thing. It's just in reverse. We want to avoid the subscriptions, automate your savings.
Absolutely, right? And if people could develop that, and I know it's just not, I mean, obviously we're paying for consumption, but that's what it is. Like in pure financial jargon, you're trading current consumption for future consumption. But the difference is it's not apples for apples, because that future consumption can be so magnified in a way that I don't think, we just don't realize. I mean, the last analogy that I kind of always play with and think about with the health and the wealth is that I'm always fascinated with quitter's day, right? So 2 weeks into January, psychologists around the world have believed that we give up our New Year's habits within 2 weeks of entering January. The second Friday in January, it said that we psychologically are done. And my guess, obviously, as my armchair psychology handbook is that it's because we don't see the results we're necessarily looking for in 2 weeks. With this type of wealth, it's a decade it's a decade before someone is going to see the results where all of a sudden they go, wow, like that was really worth it. And so it's, I empathize with every person in the world who has started a habit of savings or investing and then given up on it because they just go, look, I've been doing this for 2 years. And look, I mean, if you started in 2021 and you've been doing it for 3 years, like, I'm sorry, you're not looking at this in a positive way. And I get that, right? If you, after going through last year, a lot of newer and younger investors were saying, why on earth would I get into something like this? Like, what is this space and why would I do it when I'm down after 2 years, right? So it takes such an extended period of time for anybody even to buy into the fact that we're not selling products here. It's just truth, right? This is the truth of math.
And you shared this amazing story, and I think it's a great one. Maybe you can highlight it or give us the quick one of the janitor. Sure. It's also like a variation. I've seen this, like, you know, basically once a year it makes headlines with like a UPS employee that like did it, or, you know, grandma that like gave like $10 million to the library. Like, you know, once a year, one of these stories pops up, but I'd love to hear your story just to give some people some inspiration on what can happen.
Sure.
Across the thing. Yeah.
So that was a story, and I think I wouldn't have put that one up without citing where that, I've heard the parable before, but specifically the facts that I used in that video was taken from Morgan Housel's Psychology of Money. And if you haven't read Morgan Housel's Psychology of Money, it is one of the better, more accessible, more entertaining reads on habits of wealth building. He's super sharp thinker, but just fun. It's fun to read. And one of the styles that he uses through writing this is basically just like any good teaching, creating good positive anecdotes associated with all of the lessons that he's trying to show. And it's set up with 20 different lessons. The lesson to which you're referring is the idea that there was a janitor in Vermont, and this janitor lived a very humble lifestyle, right? And little did anybody know that when he passed away, he left $8 million to family and to charities because of putting very little amounts of money into blue chip stocks, right? And now it would be even less because you could put it into low cost index funds and have even more diversification. But this guy ended up leaving so much because he learned to live on less than what it was he was making, right? And so when we hear janitor, you know, the societal implications, unfortunately, are not philanthropist. You wouldn't expect to look on Wikipedia and see janitor and philanthropist per se in the same sentence. Yet this was one of the people that all of a sudden everyone goes, well, how did he do this? And it serves as a really good lesson of, you know, yes, times are hard. Yes, inflation is hitting us badly. Yes, a lot of our market, you know, accounts got crushed last year. But if you are able to develop the habit of just putting away just a little bit, and doing it for years and years and years, you're going to build generational wealth. You will. It's just how it's going to work. So that was what I tried to do the video about that one. Yeah.
I know. And I loved it because it just shows that you could, as long, it just takes a little bit over time. And I think you just hit one too, that's on a lot of people's mind, is inflation. And then IT student, I see your question. We'll get it in a second, but you know, inflation, yeah, it hurts us as consumers. But as an investor, it's one of our best friends, because you know who's raising all their prices is all these companies. And then if you own all these companies, you suddenly get to benefit from, you know, higher prices. The same thing if you're invested in real estate too, like inflation can also be your friend, right? You see more price appreciation, rent appreciation, things like that. So if you can move out of, you know, just being a consumer and start being an investor in whether that's the stock market or real estate or different tools, you know, inflation isn't as much of an enemy as it is when you're just living on a paycheck, right?
Right. And that's, and last year, if it didn't drive that home for people, and I want to be very clear that I again empathize with anybody who last year would challenge that idea, because everything was down last year. So not only was inflation up, but you had this incredible confluence of issues where not only was inflation up, but you had the bond market down, the stock market down, earnings were down, multiples were down. And so in this environment, I'm sure anybody's saying, well, you guys told me that real estate was a hedge. You told me that the stock market was a hedge against inflation, and I'm just getting screwed everywhere. And the answer is, yeah, you did. We all got screwed in 2022. There's no way to kind of wrap our heads around that one, as much as when all those things happen together, you have issues. But for long-term inflation hedges, absolutely, the stock market has always historically, and this is just historical, we never know what it's going to do in the future, but historically, it has absolutely always kept pace with or outpaced rates of inflation. And that's a that's a great technique.
Because, I mean, if you just think about it, right? Like now everyone's selling things for more. So these companies are seeing more revenues. And if they plan their business appropriately, they're hopefully seeing profit on that as well, right? IT student has one here that says, is there a maximum Roth IRA contribution without incurring penalties? And is that maximum based on a monthly or annual amount? I think one, we should answer his question directly, and maybe you can help Tyler, but I think it also goes to show that there's so much confusion about these investing tools out there, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's endless. I mean, I could spend my entire day on TikTok answering questions, and I usually do. I love it. But the amount of confusion, you know, I'll put up a video about a Roth, and someone will say, well, you can't touch your contributions in a Roth until you're 59 and a half. And you start to break down myths of, no, that's with a traditional IRA, right? I can always take them back. To answer this one directly, this is a great question. The maximum contributions for the Roth or the traditional IRAs are $6,500 annually this year. Speaking of inflation, this is kind of a gift that the government has given to us, is that they've said they're going to increase limits of a lot of these tax-advantaged accounts. Now, it's not an advantage unless we take advantage of it. You know, so I would encourage everybody to realize that the 401ks, the 403bs, everything has gone up this year with how much you're able to put in a tax advantaged manner. So the benefit of the Roth here is that if you have some post-tax dollars, meaning you've taken that money out of your paycheck, some of that money's already gone to the government in the form of taxes, you can put it into a Roth and let it sit for 30, 40 years of compound growth. And then when you take it out, you're not taxed a dime on that money, on 30 to 40 years of compound growth. You're not going to get a better scenario than that, right? It's just, this is the type of account that if you are 20 to 25 and you just invest in low cost funds and you're smart about it and you do it over time, it's great. It's usually based annual. To answer the second part of that question, it's usually an annual.
And the cool thing is maybe you don't know how your year is going to pan out. They also give you all the way till tax day of the next year to make that contribution. So, you know, you can actually, as of today, still make your 2022 IRA contribution, which, like you just said, is a lower amount. But, you know, we're only in February and you have until April 18th this year to make that IRA contribution. So, you know, maybe you're like, oh, I didn't know I could save as much. Or maybe you only put in $4,000 last year. You could still top up. Get all the way so you can get that full amount into the IRA. And then you can also do this year's as well. And this one will go all the way until April 15th of 2024 to be able to make that contribution. So I love it. It's a great tool to be able to do that.
Yeah. Oh, no. And I try to post about the Roth as much as possible. So just to, you know, to tie together some of these ideas about wealth building strategies, I mean, the real positive component of a Roth is that you're allowed to take advantage of not only compound growth on just money that you put in, but compound growth on investments that are should be over time historically growing at a rate between 7 and 10% on their own. Then if you also click that little button, which I would encourage people to do if they can afford it, of reinvest dividends, then all the payouts from the companies are also going back into your account. So when you add up the math on 30 years of compound interest and compound dividends and compound growth, and then you don't have to pay taxes down the line, you know, this is something that if we're not all doing this right now, I would just encourage us to put, and again, $50. You know, we're not, you just do not see these limits and say, oh, well, because I can't do the 6,500, I'm not going to contribute anything. You start small. You start small and you go from there.
And the earlier you start, the easier it becomes. I mean, there's also a lot of math on this too. I mean, if you are watching this and you're 16, 17, 18, starting with $10, I mean, you'll be set by the time you're in your 40s. If you're in your 20s, you know, put a little more in. But there's also that Chinese proverb, right? Because like there's people in their 30s and 40s that are kicking themselves. They didn't start. And I always think of it, it's the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. And the second best time is today, right? Like, look, we all want to go back. Like I wish I could go back and like pick certain stocks and make all these perfectly timed choices. We can't. But you know what you can do is you can start today. You can make some smart choices, some small amounts, and just have it keep growing and growing over time, right?
And that's one of the greatest psychological hacks that you could use. You know, anybody thinking about money, like we get so wrapped up in this would have, should have, could have mentality that it inhibits us from making the choice today that's going to be the right choice. So the analogy I'll give here is that January 1st comes around, and societally we live in this place where we say, all right, that's my time to reset and start something new. So we start doing something on January 1st. Most of us quit midway through January. But the problem that I think is happening in our culture is that we don't have another January 1st before the next year, right? Like, if we aren't waking up every single day of our lives thinking that that's a January 1st, that that's an opportunity, there's no difference between January 1st and April 13th when it comes to creating a lifelong habit that you can, you know, sustain you through good times and bad. So I would encourage every one of us to wake up every day and say, what habits do I want to have developed 5 years from now? What do I want to develop? Not what do I want to develop? What do I want to have developed? And TikTok is the perfect example. Like, I've been creating on social media for 7 months. 7 months. 7 months ago, I said, I'm going to do this for 1 year consistently every day. And it has led to conversations with you. It's led to going out to a conference in Las Vegas to talk about financial literacy. It's led to more interactions with people online than I know what to do with, and talking to brands and talking to companies about different products. 7 months of consistency has led to some of the greatest connections I've had in my life. And I would just encourage anybody out there, like, it doesn't have to be social media. This can be any component of your life. This is just something small daily. And man, does it add up quickly. It does.
And you nailed it. I mean, that's how we started the College Investor. So I started it and I wrote 3 articles a week, and I made a commitment that I was going to do that for 6 months. And then I did 3 articles a week for 6 months. And then guess what? I just kept going. And then here we are 12 years later. And I was able to leave my job and do this full time and have a team now that helps us do this full time. And it just continues to grow and grow. And so this year for 2023, our New Year's resolution was, let's do more live streams. So we are doing one a week every Wednesday at 10 a.m. And here we are, we're in February, we're six in, but you have to build the habit and get the consistency over time, or else you're not going to do it. But it does continue to open doors. It does continue to see the value. But the hard part is you do not see the value after the first time you do it. You just don't.
Yep.
No one does. No one sees the value of the first day at the gym, the first day of eating healthy, whatever it is, you don't see it. But, you know, maybe after 3 months, you start to see a little progress. And then, you know, it takes 6 months or a year. And then you talked about before the call, I mean, you started as a teacher. So like, what, you know, you weren't even in wealth management. What kind of habits did you build in those days? Because I think that's almost more relatable of like, did you have a 403B? Were you able to contribute to it? Like, how did that look like back then, you know, versus the options you have now? I don't know. I'm really curious.
Well, no, actually, I'll tell you, I think the biggest benefit, and until you asked it that way, I've never really processed it as well as I think I'm going to right now, is that one of the best parts about being a teacher is it actually allowed me to have a very humble friend circle. And I hope you kind of will see where I'm going with this on a wealth scale, is that when you have a humble friend circle, I never felt as if I had to keep up with any extravagant lifestyle. I wasn't in New York City running with a finance crowd. I wasn't in LA running with an acting crowd, right? I wasn't, you know, doing something where I felt as if the person next to me was somehow showing off more of their wealth and that I needed to spend more of my paycheck just to keep up with them. You know, so our spending habits were so minimal and so humble that I could just kind of exist on a week. And the students never, you put on your same shirt and tie each day. You went in, you did your job. You were just a teacher. You know, you weren't even a human being. and so you'd go home and you do your thing. But what was great about it is that allowed me to just say, okay, well, if I don't have to spend this money to feel like I have to impress a neighbor or colleagues in this case, I've got a lot that I can put away, right? Like it's a pretty humble lifestyle, and I can start just like the janitor. Like you can just say, look, like, no, I'm not making much. And no, I wasn't, you know, it's not a big paycheck. I don't, you know, anyone who gets into teaching for the paycheck, it's, you know, I knew what I was getting into and absolutely loved it, but I was able to put in a lot into my 401k. And just like you're saying, like our company match was insane. Nice. I mean, it was insane. And when I started seeing what that could do by taking advantage of maxing out my own contributions at the very least, so I could get the full company match, it was incredible. I mean, incredible where that went after a couple of years.
I love it. Because I also think it's like looking at that total compensation. I do think we need to probably pay teachers more, absolutely. But teachers need to look at their total compensation too. And one area I see a lot is like student loan debt, right? So teachers could get public service loan forgiveness. And I can't tell you, I would say 60% of teachers are kind of lost in how to get their loans forgiven. And that could potentially add up to $60,000, $70,000 bonus, quote unquote, in getting your loans forgiven. That goes on top of being able to save for retirement. By not having to deal with that, you can put more into your future by saving more in your 403B or for retirement, you know, or for other goals, right? So please, please talk to your HR people, Google your aunt, like Google is your friend sometimes, like find what works for you in your situation, because there are ways to build wealth. There are ways to find a balance between like where you're at today and like some longer term plans.
Well, just as far as the building, and the one other thing, the non-traditional way of thinking about wealth too, for any company too, when you're asking HR about monetary benefits, also ask them about professional development benefits, because you can actually kind of, roundabout make a ton of extra money through professional development funding that they're not going to give you in cash, but they would give you to develop yourself. So if there's a skill that you want to learn, or a conference to which you want to go, or a online courses that you want to take, go talk to HR, because more often than not, these funds usually just go unused from one year to the next, because not enough people know about them or ask about them. So if you have a resource right now where you can go ask someone what professional development tools are available, I got every one of my graduate degrees was funded by the institutions for which I worked. I did not pay a dime because I went and asked the right questions. Now, obviously that's a privilege big time, but I would encourage everyone to do that too.
And I love that, because when you talk about the ROI of education, which is a very big topic today, and I think part of the student loan crisis is that people are not seeing as much of an ROI as they expected and or they borrowed for.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's really simple math. Like, and you can argue like a ton of reasons why this happens, but the best way to get a great ROI is to have someone else pay for it.
It's a pretty guaranteed ROI there. Yeah.
100%. Just like we're talking about an employee match on a contribution. Yeah. Another area where you can get some free money that I actually really like is an HSA. If you're eligible for it, a lot of companies and organizations will give you like $1,000 or more. And a lot of it's not like, you don't even have to match it. Usually it's like you go get your annual physical and like take a wellness survey that says like, you know, all these questions, and that usually gets you free money. So if you have the opportunity for free money, please go get your free money.
Yeah. It seems obvious, but seriously, go get it.
Because it does take some work. And like you said, if you don't ask the right questions, check your HR benefits. Like, let's be honest, hopefully somebody is watching this at work right now, because you are doing that. Like, go on your HR's website and just start clicking around and seeing what those benefits are for you. You might be very shocked in terms of, like you said, tuition reimbursement plans, or paying for education, or financial wellness seminars, or, you know, all kinds of stuff. Especially at these large Fortune 500 companies, like the list of benefits is enormous,
but they're
buried in like asterisks hidden, you know?
Yep.
Awesome. Well, Tyler, I appreciate you spending the last 50 minutes with me here. This has been a lot of fun. Where can people find you? What should people know? And take it away.
So obviously my biggest draw right now is just trying to connect with people on TikTok. It's kind of the place where I spend most of my time. I don't think I have the emotional bandwidth to do anything else right now as far as the social media. I know, you know, people talk about YouTube and TikTok's a full-time job if you're really rolling with it. So I'm happy to be there. Also, you know, if people do have questions about Roths and traditionals and 401ks and 403bs and any HR benefits, I work for an investment management company in Vermont, Intrack Investment Management. I'm a portfolio manager there, and always happy to hop on a call and just try to help people think through these ideas in any way that I can help and be of added value to someone's life.
I love it. Well, thanks so much for being here. I appreciate you spending the time. Hopefully people got some really good insights into the real ways that people are building wealth and not falling for it. It's not sexy. It's not glamorous, like you said, but it really does work if you give it some time. So awesome, guys. Great. Thank you very much. Until next week, we will see you then.
Thank you.